Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's talk is entitled Back to Buddhist Basics, Part 1 and 2. In this Dharma Talk, Lama Kathy will review the first two of the three levels, often called the three yanas, of the Buddhist teachings. The initial level of teaching, called Hinayana, or Path of Individual Liberation from Suffering, is where we begin our Buddhist practice, using quiet sitting meditation called shamatha to gain familiarity with our minds, and the practice of Buddhist ethics, not harming oneself and others and benefiting them instead, to change our thoughts from negative to positive. The second level of teaching, called Mahayana, or Path of Liberation for All, builds on meditation and ethics and adds methods of training the mind in loving kindness and compassion as a means to reduce selfishness, a root cause of suffering, and increase selflessness, a root cause of happiness. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm happy to be with you again and really appreciate all of you who are joining us today, especially those who had the opportunity to watch Lama Adam Berner give his very first Dharma talk over on our Columbus KTC Facebook Live. And so I'm incredibly delighted that Lama Adam is now able to be part of our teaching team. I'm really excited about that. And I'm really happy that you were able to join him for his teaching on the Four Noble Truths. And if you didn't get a chance to see it, you can go to the our Facebook Live, which is on Columbus KTC Facebook page. We're going to try to have him on YouTube next week or the week after. I don't remember. But in any case, we're going to try to have him back on for Dharma Talks in the near future. So thank you for joining us for that. And I hope you're all doing well. I know the news is just continuously coming in that so many people have had to withdraw from life and be on this unintentional retreat because of the coronavirus. And I'm really sad to hear that that the number of people who have died is increasing, and we're praying for all of them. I keep a candle on my shrine, and I'm hoping that we can all pray for the future, that everyone is well and continues to and that our group continues to improve in health, at all of us as a human group continues to heal. And I just want to encourage everybody to continue doing your daily meditation and your daily prayer as a way of working with your feelings and concerns in our current situation. And I'm really hoping also that we can get back together once again at some time in the near future. But in the meantime, here we are, and we're trying to make the best of our situation by being together for these classes and Dharma sharing. And what I'd like to do today is review a little bit of what we talked about last week, because I realized after I did my talk last week on questions and answers that I also had begun the teaching on Back to Buddhist Basics last week also. And I realized that maybe it would be a good thing for me to put a short recap of last week's Back to Buddhist Basics talk right here, as so that we could put part one and part two all together. So hope you'll stick with me as I review a little bit of what we talked about last week, and then continue the discussion with Buddhist Basics. So that's what we'll be doing for the next 40 minutes or so, working on Back to Buddhist Basics. So I'm going to start with a short prayer. And if this is a prayer with which you're familiar, you can join in. And if it's a prayer with which you're unfamiliar, you can join in your heart and in your mind, thinking that you dedicate this time that we're together to the benefit of all who are suffering. Oh, it's the four-line refuge prayer, by the way. Okay. Oh, Sanje Chodan Sochi Chanam La Changchu Badu Tani Chapsu Chi Taji Chin Sochi Pei Sonam Ji Drola Penshi Sanje Druparsho. And now the prayer of the four immeasurable meditations. Semchen tamche dewa tang dewe kyutang denpa kyuchi tunga tang dunya kyutang trawa chuchi dunya mebe dewa dampa tam in trawa chuchi nerin chandan nidan trawe tam yen chenpula nepa juruchi. And finally, a prayer for a blessing of the gurus of the lineage. Oh, Palin Sawe Lama Rinpoche, Dagi Chi War Pede Den Shula, Kajin Jimbo Kone Chi Sunte, Kusun Tugging Utrup Saldusun. Okay, thank you. Once again, thanks for joining. Last week, we were talking, doing some questions and answers, and I thought it would be a good idea for us to start a brief review of the Buddhist basics, since a couple of weeks ago, we talked about how to turn your everyday situation in quarantine into a form of Dharma retreat. And so we talked about that a few weeks ago, so I thought it would be good for us to sort of review the types of Buddhist practice and what Buddhist practice is and how it can help us with the various situations we're facing right now. And so the first thing we talked about last week was the fact that we all have what is called Buddha nature. We all have a mind that has the potential to awaken to its own nature. That is, you could say that from the point of view of the technical Buddhist teachings, the mind that each individual has is unestablished as a material thing. Our minds have no color, they have no shape, they have no location, they have no beginning and end, and so on. And as such, you could say that the mind is not established as a material thing that's made of matter, atoms, and molecules, and whatnot. But you can also say that the mind, even though it is not a material thing, it's not nothing. It's not vast emptiness. It's not a vast void or a vacuum, because it knows things and it experiences things. So because mind has a knowing and experiential quality, and because mind has a limitless quality, you could say that it has the potential to experience everything, including itself. Right now, our lives are spent facing outward toward the outside world. We look at the outside world as being our experience, our world. We experience the outer world of trees and sidewalks and people, and we experience the inner world of our thoughts, feelings, and emotions. And we make the assumption that there is someone's, a person, a perhaps we'll call them self, a self that is experiencing all of these things. So because we're more outer focused right now, outwardly toward the world and so forth, we tend to look to that world to be our satisfaction. We tend to look to that world to be our everything, to give us everything that we need. And so as a result of this outward focus, we are tossed and turned over and over again by our wants and needs and desires. And so our wants and needs and desires eventually take over, and we don't even feel like we have a life anymore because we're so busy chasing comfort and happiness. And so the Buddhist teaching is that our mind itself is the seat the seat of all of our experience is the mind. And so if we want to work with our experience of the world, it's important to work with our experience of our minds. And so since happiness and suffering happen in the mind, it's up to us as practitioners of the Dharma to be able to recognize the Dharma or the Buddha's truth. And in this way, we can practice the Buddhist truths and ourselves find a source of happiness within ourselves that does not rely upon the outside world. Because right now, we're totally reliant on the outside world to give us everything. But because of that, because of our reliance on the outside world, when it disappoints us, we feel a deep disappointment and sometimes even despair. And as a result of this, we're again turned around and around and around. And this is why when the Buddha taught about the mind, he taught that the mind is not this solid and real, permanent and unchanging self that we believe it to be, that the mind actually is not established as a thing and that it actually can change. And as such, this is this mind, which can experience everything, including itself, is sometimes called Buddha nature. It's called Buddha nature. And as a result of this, we have the potential to awaken to our own endless source of goodness and endless source of happiness, which is our basic mind and our basic goodness and our basic Buddha nature. But right now, since we're busy with the outside world, working only with the outside world, we have we are taken away from our mind and out and go outward. And this is why meditation is such an important part of the Buddhist basics. The first of the Buddhist basics I wanted to share was this teaching about the nature of mind as being limitless and luminous and experiential. So in this particular way, that's the first of the basics, is our basis, which is Buddha nature. But you might say, well, if I have Buddha nature, why am I not experiencing it right this minute? Why do I not experience it now? And the answer to that is that we don't experience our Buddha nature right now because we have not trained ourselves to be aware of it. We haven't trained ourselves to recognize it, and we haven't trained ourselves to be able to rest in it. So we haven't seen it, we haven't recognized it, and we haven't rested in it. And so as a result, this means training is necessary in order to experience one's Buddha nature. And so there are three levels of the Buddhist teaching that I wanted to talk about in this Buddhist basics class. I wanted to talk about the first level of the Buddhist teaching, the second level of the Buddhist teaching, and the third level of the Buddhist teaching. The first level of the Buddhist teaching is sometimes called the path of individual liberation. In Sanskrit, it's called Hina Yana. Y-A-N-A means path or level. And Hina means smaller. And so I joke around when I talk about the Hinayana or the path of individual liberation. I joke around. I say, well, it's like those little Italian cars that only seat one person. And I think this car is so old. I think it was made in the 50s or the 60s. And it's like a little egg on wheels. And it was a for real thing. The steering wheel was in the door. And then you close the door and then you could drive this little one person car around. And so I like to compare the Hinayana or this individual liberation path to this small one person car, because that's as many people as you can take on this trip. And so it's called smaller, not because it's less good, but because it's, I guess you could say that it is our individual happiness and our individual liberation from suffering that we are talking about. And so the practices of this individual liberation path are very simple. They're quieting the mind through tranquility meditation or shamatha in Sanskrit, and the other is practicing ethics and morality. These teachings on shamatha and discipline or ethics were among the very first teachings given by the Buddha, and they were meant for his initial audience of listeners and practitioners. He wanted first to let them know that their idea of self as being a material thing that was created by God and then would someday return to God was not the way he experienced his world and himself and his enlightenment. And so the Buddha then gave teachings on the mind as being and the self-concept as being a complex of experiences that could be enumerated as five aggregates or five little heaps. There's a form and feeling and mental formation, consciousness, and habits. And so you put all of these things together, and these five aggregates are what our self is. Form, feeling, perception, mental formation, and consciousness. I got them wrong the first time through, so that's the correct way. Form, feeling, perception, mental formation, and consciousness. That we take those five things and we imagine that to be a permanent self. When the Buddha was able to show through his logic that each one of those parts can be broken down to smaller parts and smaller parts and smaller parts, and then eventually be shown to not be anything all by itself. And so in this way, he showed that the self-concept was not what we thought, and that it actually was open and changeable, that we could actually change our self-concept. And so in any case, what we want to do with our practice, our initial practice, is to recognize the four truths known by the noble, which Lama Adam talked about last hour, that suffering's part of life, that suffering has a cause, and that cause is clinging and fixation to self and everything else. And that because of this, because it has a cause, suffering has a solution, and there's a path that consists of doing no harm and practicing virtue, which is ethics, doing no harm, practicing virtue, which is ethics, and taming the mind, which is meditation. These are the initial teachings of the Buddha in his first level of teaching, the level of the Hinayana. By allowing ourselves to recognize that we create our experience by what we think about. You remember that that quotation I shared with you last time? The quotation from the Buddha's teaching on his very first booklet of teachings was called the Dhammapada. It was his explanation, his basic explanations. He said, we are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts we make the world. And if we think, speak, and act with a pure mind, happiness follows us, the pure mind being the selfless mind. And if we think, speak, and act with an impure mind, that is the selfish mind, suffering follows us. And so the causes of suffering, negative actions, can be avoided, and the cause of happiness, virtuous actions, can be cultivated. And so in so doing, we can have an impact on our experience of the world by what we think, say, and do. That's the teaching on Buddhist ethics. And then the teaching on meditation, it involves being able to allow one's attention to rest, to come to rest. And that after allowing one's attention to come to rest, then one pays attention to the object of meditation. And then as one's attention wanders from that, one gently brings one's attention back over and over and over again to the object of meditation. And by doing this, and by placing our attention and then replacing our attention when it wanders, we cultivate attention. Now, when we do this at first, what we'll notice is that we have a short period of attention in meditation that's followed by a larger period of mental wandering. But that if we notice the mental wandering, if we notice it and we take hold of our mental wandering, and we could even label it thinking, if we could do that and let it go and then consciously return our attention to the breath for a fresh start, this is a way of making our meditation work for us. It's a way of making meditation possible for us. It's not that meditation is something that you sit down and you're perfect at the very first time you try it. It's called the practice of meditation. It's not called the instant perfection of meditation. It's called the practice of meditation. So when we first sit down to practice this shamatha or tranquility meditation, what will happen is we place our attention on the breath as it goes out and comes in. We follow the breath with our attention as it comes out and goes in. And then maybe a thought about the past will come up, and then we'll follow that. And when we notice that we have followed that thought, we can actually label it. We can call it thinking. We can let it go and then put our attention on the breath for a fresh start. And so as a result of this, we have a short period of attention followed by wandering that is followed by a return to attention. And that return to attention is what is really the practice of meditation. It's what makes it's the powerful moment in meditation is when you notice and then return, notice and return, notice and return. So so that's a little bit about the two practices of the first level of the Buddhist teaching, the practice of Buddhist ethics, and then the practice of meditation. And they actually help each other, because when we have when we are more attentive to our thoughts, words, and actions, then we can notice when we are doing things that are harmful to others. And we can stop ourselves from doing those things that are harmful to others. And then we can also notice when we're doing those things that are beneficial for others. And so we can notice those and do those. Then, in fact, if we can notice and do those things of noticing, letting go, and returning over and over again, then we can actually notice our virtuous actions and our virtuous thoughts and cultivate more of those. And we can notice our non-virtuous thoughts, words, and actions and discontinue those. So in this way, by training our attention, we can actually change our experience of the world. And the other thing that we get from this practice of meditation is a piece of insight into ourselves that we may not have had before. And that is when we are watching our object of meditation, and when we're watching our object of meditation, if we let go of that attention, then we wander and get lost. And then if we notice that we've wandered, then we bring our attention back again. And what's really interesting is that if we can bring the attention back and let go of that thought, that means that that thought disappeared entirely. It disappeared completely. And by disappearing completely, it gives us a moment of relief from that thought. And it also shows us that thoughts are discontinuous. That means our thought is not something that is permanent, solid, and real and continuous. It actually can be broken. And if we can break one single thought, we can change anything that is arising in our mind. That it basically gives us the power to create a different world and a different experience for ourselves. And so this knowledge that thoughts are discontinuous is important, because our self-concept is that we believe in so strongly is actually made of these thoughts, made of these discontinuous thoughts. That's all that our self-concept is thought after thought after thought that we cling to. And so what I think the Buddha was trying to show us through the experience of meditation itself, he was trying to show us the truth of his words by showing us what happens when we let go of a single thought. It's almost like you take a momentary rebirth. You have those of you who have read Mingyur Rinpoche's book, In Love with the World, he describes rebirth as happening every single moment with whatever thought you're believing at that time. And so if you're believing in the world being terrible, then the world is pretty terrible. But if you believe the world is pretty wonderful, it is pretty wonderful. And so let's say you're meditating and you have a thought about something mean that someone said to you. For a moment, you're reborn in that moment of conflict with this person and feeling harmed by this person. And in that particular way, you are reborn in the moment of that thought. And by being reborn in the moment of that thought, then you're in that world. You're definitely in that world. And then when you let go of that thought, it is as though you leave that world of that thought and go into your next rebirth, into the next moment of that thought. And so in this way, we're taking rebirth not just at the end of our lives to a future rebirth, then we're taking a rebirth right now with every thought that we think about and can experience. And so this is what the Buddha was trying to explain to us in his initial teachings, in this first level of teachings. He was trying to show us that our mind was the seat of our experience, and he was also trying to show us that by changing our minds, we change our experience of the world. But he didn't stop there. He continued to teach, because being able to understand that self-fixation is the root cause of suffering, then of course we want to know how to resolve that. And it would take a very, very, very long time to practice just ethics and just meditation to come to a place where one then could see and experience the nature of one's own mind. It takes a very long time to practice in that way. It's powerful and it works, but it's not quick. It takes a very long time to practice in that way. So the Buddha decided to, in his second level of teaching, which is sometimes called the Mahayana or the larger vehicle, sometimes I call it the vehicle for the liberation of all. In the second set of teachings, the Buddha explained to us how to use love and compassion as a path. Those of you who've practiced meditation know that after you've been practicing meditation for a while, you become more attuned to your own thoughts, feelings, and emotions, but you also may become more attuned to the thoughts, feelings, and emotions of other people. And so in that way, you can slowly begin to feel for the experience of other people. You can begin to experience their sadness and to be aware of their sadness. And for many of us, that brings out a feeling of compassion and empathy. And this empathy that we begin to feel is the start of love. The Buddha's definition of love is wishing for the happiness of another. And the Buddha's definition of compassion is wishing for beings to be free from suffering. And so in this way, we begin with empathy of like, wow, that other person over there, they're suffering. It's obvious that they're suffering. And that person over there, they're free from suffering. And we begin to rejoice in the freedom from suffering for the one group, and we begin to feel compassion for those who are experiencing suffering on their sides. And so that empathy then is sort of the beginning of the wish for those others to be happy. And this wish for others to be happy is the first key of suffering and its causes, and have happiness in its causes. And so if you remember the Four Immeasurables prayer that was recited at the beginning, it goes like this: may all beings be happy and have the causes of happiness. May they be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May they have that great happiness, which is freedom from suffering. May they dwell in great equanimity, free from attachment and aversion. And so in this way, what you can take from that is that we're all alike as human beings. We're all alike in that we all want happiness, and we all would like to be separate from suffering. So I remember Trungpa Rinpoche gave a teaching on this once at KTD Monastery, and he said, it's not like 80% of humanity wants happiness and 20% doesn't care. 100% of all beings want happiness. And therefore, what we can do in our lives is that we can try to be aware of this wish by sentient beings to be happy and try to do our best to help them to have this happiness. Even if all we do is make the wish, may all beings be happy. And if we can make that wish, may all beings be happy. Interestingly enough, it changes us. It may not change their lives immediately, but it does change us and how we experience ourselves and the world. Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, when he was teaching about the four immeasurables one time, he often would teach it in this sort of backwards fashion. He would teach equanimity first, saying, if we are all alike, if we are all wanting happiness, then this is equanimity. And if we are all wishing for happiness and are aware that we're all wishing for happiness, this is the beginning of love, because it is the beginning of our wish for others to have happiness. So if we know that we all want happiness, that's equanimity, then if we begin to make the wish for all beings to be happy, that's the beginning of love. And then if we wish for those beings to be free from suffering and its causes, that's the beginning of compassion. And then if we live our lives in this way, it brings joy to us. And so this is the, to me, it's the essence of the Mahayana, this wish for others to be happy. Because right now, we as I was saying earlier, as we are thinking about the external world and our wish to be happy in the external world by getting more stuff and having more friends and having more of everything we think brings us happiness from the outside, since we're still so externally focused, we have to start in some way to be more internally focused. And so that's why implanting this wish to be of benefit to ourselves and others, this wish for others' happiness for many of us is a very simple and easy beginning of the Mahayana. It's very simple, very easy. We don't have to lift heavy weights to wish for the happiness of beings. We can do that with our hearts. And the more we do it, the more it becomes our way of living. Kempo Kartha Rinpoche was giving a teaching, I think it was last year or the year before, where he talked about this, this wish to be of benefit to others. And he talked about how powerful just that wish was. He says, if you wish for the happiness of others, even if you can't do anything about it, even if you don't have the skill to actually help people, but if you just keep repeating the wish over and over to be a benefit to everyone you see, everyone you encounter during the day, everyone who thinks about you, remembers you, if you wish for them to be happy, if you make that wish for them to be happy, he said it starts a momentum of goodness. That's the word that the translator used. It starts a momentum of goodness within you that he said, if you continue working with this, this momentum of goodness, he said, eventually will become self-sustaining and will be, it will be a source of inner strength for you. This wish will become a source, this engine of goodness, you know, this momentum of goodness will become a source of inner strength that will eventually broaden out to your entire life. So that's a little bit about the second level of the Buddha's teaching. And in order to practice this, in the first level of teaching, individual liberation, it's called individual liberation because it's about ethics and morality, which changes our, we'll call it happiness and suffering profile. It changes our karmic profile. And shamatha, which makes us aware of what we think, say, and do so we can make better choices. This brings about happiness for ourselves alone. That's the Hinayana or the vehicle of individual liberation. Now in the Mahayana, the Buddha taught us to look outward toward others and to begin to think about others as a way of helping to draw us out of ourselves and draw us away from selfish focus. Because if we try to chase our selfishness away with a stick, it's probably not going to work. Whereas if we take a drop of water, the water of love and the water of compassion, and slowly wear down our selfishness drop by drop by drop by drop, just as a drop by drop of water fills the glass. You know, the glass can be filled drop by drop. We can also drop by drop begin to fill ourselves with love and compassion, and we can slowly wear away our selfishness. And so this is why the Mahayana methods of wishing for the benefit of others are so powerful. Kempo Rinpoche said in his teaching on this, he said that when you practice love, you wear away the habits of selfishness. And when you wear away the habits of selfishness, you're wearing away the causes of suffering. And so in that way, it brings liberation more rapidly, more quickly. And then in the Mahayana, there's also a methodology taught. One of the best methods for practicing love and compassion is the meditation called Tonglen. And if you remember from one of my previous talks, I shared with you Kempo Kartha Rinpoche's teaching on Tonglen, which is in his book Dharma Paths. And I'm going to share that with you in a minute as a form of meditation we can do together. But before I go to that practice, I want to also talk about the other practices of the Mahayana, which are the six perfect virtues. It's great to say practice love toward others, practice compassion toward others, but we need a method. We need a how. How do we practice love and compassion toward ourselves and others? And the how is contained in the six perfect virtues. By practicing patience and ethics, by practicing generosity and ethics and patience, diligence, meditation, and wisdom. Again, practicing generosity, ethics, patience, diligence, meditation, and wisdom. By practicing these six perfect virtues, we gradually wear away our selfishness. When you're generous, it's I guess you could say it's the number one cure for non-attachment. Now, we have to give in the right manner in the right way. And that's why there's extensive teachings given, particularly in the wonderful book, the Jewel Ornament of Liberation by Gampopa, about how to give wisely. You don't want to give in a wrong-headed way things that you actually need, and then you regret giving. So we have to practice generosity in the proper way. And we can talk about that later on in a different talk about how to practice the six perfect virtues. But you can see that if you're generous, then that opens your heart a little bit. And then if you're generous, it's very easy to be ethical because you're not worried about cheating or getting ahead of somebody. And if you're generous and ethical, then patience is not so hard because you recognize that other people are up against their own confusion and can't do the right thing in the situations where they should. And then also you'll have more patience with your own practice, which will then give you diligence. So if you're generous and ethical and patient, diligence is actually in your meditation practice, diligence is actually very easy. And if you're generous and ethical and patient and diligent, meditation is not hard. It's something that you can dedicate yourselves to because you know the value. And if you're generous and ethical and patient and diligent and meditate well, then wisdom is the result. So through the practice of and teaching on the six perfect virtues, the path for the liberation of all is actually enjoyable and useful. I frequently go back into my Catholic Pezenate, which is, she said that, of course, the path of Jesus' love is the path to God. So she said, all the way to heaven is heaven. For he said, I am the way. So love is the way. And therefore, we, if we practice love, this is what we experience. And so in any case, this is why it's called the path of liberation for all, because we're not just helping ourselves and taking care of ourselves. We're actually helping all sentient beings. And we're helping them to be liberated as well, because if we're generous to someone, then we're connected to them karmically in a positive way so we could help them now and in the future. And if we are And if we practice ethics toward people, we have a positive connection toward them. If we practice patience toward people, we have a positive connection. Diligence and meditation and wisdom also bring about a continuity of goodness that hopefully will be the fruition of our wish. It will make our wish to be of true benefit to others. It will make it come true because more and more deeply until hopefully at some point we can see our Buddha nature in a way we never could imagine having seen it before. And this is discussed in Kempo Rinpoche's book, Dharma Paths, when he talks about the five paths of the Mahayana. And he talks about the experience of the path of seeing, where one sees one's Buddha nature directly and clearly, and how after that moment one becomes not just a bodhisattva in training, but a bodhisattva on the levels of awakening. So we can talk about that at a later time, but I wanted to share this part with you today as a way of talking about the path for liberation of all. Next week, I'm going to be talking about the third level of the Buddha's teaching, the Vajrayana, and we'll be talking about the two paths of the Vajrayana, the path of liberation through meditation, and the path of skillful means through the practice of mantra. And so we'll talk about those next week. But I think I would like to close today's lesson on the path, the first two of the Buddha's three levels of teachings, with a teaching from Kempo Kartha Rinpoche's book, Dharma Paths, on sending and receiving. Shantideva, back in the 8th century, the great Buddhist saint, Shantideva gave a teaching on this, and he said, if a person wishes a shelter from samsara, this world of suffering, if a person wishes shelter from samsara quickly for themselves and for all others, they will practice the sacred mystery of exchanging oneself for others. And this exchanging oneself for others is the basis of the practice of Tonglen. Tong is a Tibetan word meaning sending, and Len means to take. So sending and taking, or sending and receiving, is a way to train your mind in love and compassion. Because as you know, we have a certain amount of naturally occurring love and compassion. We have love and compassion for ourselves and for our families and our friends. But there are many beings that we don't have love and compassion for. You could say those beings are outside the fence of our love and compassion. And because they're outside the fence of our love and compassion, they are beings we could potentially harm. And so in order to expand our capacity for love and compassion, we use our imagination to imagine being all loving and imagine being all compassionate, which for us is only just something we can imagine right now. It's not something that we can actualize in this moment. But if we can train in this, exchanging ourselves for others, essentially putting ourselves in the place of other people, if we can do that, if we can do that on a regular basis, if we can imagine ourselves in the place of other people, then we can begin to see how they think and feel some compassion for them. So in Kempo Rinpoche's book, on page 118 and 119, he teaches sending and receiving. And because I think that, you know, there's just no messing with Kempo Rinpoche's words. They're perfect. Citta, the mind of awakening. Bodhi means awakening, and citta means mind. So developing bodhicitta is developing the mind that wants to awaken from the sleep of selfishness and awaken to its own Buddha nature. And those who practice bodhicitta are bodhisattvas. So there's that. So he says, in addition to gaining an intellectual understanding of bodhicitta from the Buddha's teachings, it's important to have a practical experience of the practice of bodhicitta. To that end, there is a meditation called sending and receiving, or Tonglen in Tibetan, that can help you develop this enlightened attitude. When you do this short meditation, first sit in the meditation posture, relaxing your body and sitting rather comfortably. Then breathe normally, following the natural course of your breath. Imagine that with the exhalation of your breath, whatever merit you have accumulated from beginningless time are accumulating now and will accumulate in all future time, radiates outward toward all sentient beings. Just as when the sun shines, the rays of light pervade all places, so with your exhalation, these positive qualities radiate, bringing happiness, well-being, comfort, health, and longevity to all beings without discrimination. Then, when you inhale, imagine you are taking in all of the suffering, confusion, sickness, turmoil, and conflict of sentient beings. All of the suffering and turmoil of sentient beings merges with you, and this uproots the suffering and confusion of sentient beings. Because of the strength of bodhicitta, the power of your sincere attitude of wanting to benefit beings, as soon as the suffering merges with you, it dissolves into nothing and disappears. It's just as if you had collected some dust together into a little pile and a strong wind blew it away. Practicing in this way, in inhaling and exhaling in this way, meditate for a short time. So we'll just do a little bit of a one-minute meditation, imagining with the out-breath that we're giving goodness to all beings of the world. We can think about our family and friends in the front row, and we can think of all of the other beings out there in the universe, and imagine on the out-breath that we are sending goodness to them, and on the in-breath, we're removing their suffering, which then dissolves into nothing within us and disappears. So we'll do that for just a moment. Kempo Rinpoche's teaching continues. After you have meditated in this way for a short while, let go of the mental focus and let your mind rest in a state of awareness. Attempt to have the sense that there are no sentient beings to meditate on, there's no person meditating, and there is no active meditation taking place. Try to transcend these three, which are relative, and give birth to something ultimate. Something effortless and spontaneous like the arising and disappearing of clouds in the sky. Just remain in a state of clarity. There is no act, no thought of doing something outside or inside, no you doing something. Just cut all of that off and remain in a state of awareness. And we'll do that briefly now. Letting go of the mental focus and allowing mind to rest. And then when we arise from that moment of rest, we return to ourselves in our normally scheduled world of self and other. You know, it's one of those things where when we return from that meditation, it's almost like we enjoyed the freedom of those few moments of relaxation. And we can then dedicate that relaxation to the benefit of others. So it's really good when you complete a meditation like this to mentally dedicate the goodness to all beings. Now I can see from the time that we're about out of time for now, but I'm hoping that by talking about these, I'm calling them Buddhist basics, that this will give you an idea that the practices of Dharma, of the Buddhist teachings, they build on one another. The first level of the Buddhist teaching about ethics and also meditation, it forms a foundation. And then on top of that, we can branch out and begin to think about others and begin to work on our own selfishness by expressing and experiencing gratitude and love for others. And then next week, we'll talk about the transformative practices of mantra, what mantra is and how it works. And we'll talk a little bit about sacred outlook and understanding the basic nature of things and how understanding that helps us to have a window into the basic goodness of all beings. So we'll stop for this today. But thank you very much again for joining for this talk, and thanks also for anybody who has made donations to the Columbus KTC. We're still collecting money to rebuild our center. We're getting closer and closer to meeting our goal, and we're crossing our fingers. Please pray that we get the rebuilding started this year, because I think we could be close. If we can just pull a few more things together, we might actually be able to build this year. So if you are if you're liking the talks and so forth, if you could go to columbusktc.org and click on donate, it would be just wonderful. In the meantime, let's sit quietly for a moment and mentally dedicate the goodness of our session and time today to the benefit of all those, especially those who are suffering right now from the illnesses, those who have had and are getting the virus that is causing so much trouble for everyone. We'll pray for them, and we'll also make the aspiration and dedicate our goodness to all of those who are on the front lines of the illness, all of our members of our own Sangha who are working in hospitals and who are trying to help the sick, and make the aspiration that all beings are free from suffering. So we'll think quietly, we'll meditate quietly that all beings are free from suffering, and make that aspiration. Through this merit, may all obtain the omniscience of awakening. May it defeat our common enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may we free all beings. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. Okay, thanks everyone. It's been great seeing you again. And I'm sorry for all the people who have been commenting on the Facebook stream. Sorry I couldn't get to your comments, but thank you. I'll see if I can answer your questions next week. Okay, so have a great day. Om Mani Padme Hum.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.